folks on my mother's side were from York State. My grandfather was a Civil War veteran. He was at Gettysburg and I think Antietam. He was a very salty old man. He practically raised me from six years on. My mother was an Iowa farm girl. She lived in a sod hut for years. Pretty fair poet. She wrote good poetry. Imaginative, hardworking, a loving woman. My father was a sheet metal worker. Worked hard, fairly uneducated. Worked as hard as he could to make his family prosper, but it was a hard life long about that time. That was on one side. The other side of the family was the Clinton side. And they came from the West Virginia hills. They were corn processors originally, till the government caught up with them. And they came to this part of the country with, again, hard work. My grandfather on my father's side was a coal miner at Iron Mountain. And they settle down in Monette and Carthage and finally here in Joplin. Since we didn't have much of an income, I went to work in a stone quarry cutting paving block. Well, before that, I hustled Saturday evening posts on Carthage Street. 10 years old, I went to work in a stone quarry hustling paving blocks, cutting paving blocks with an air hammer. Then I worked in any kind of hard work I could get for years. Worked during my vacations, had put in money in the house in order that we ate, which I was glad to do, didn't matter. After I got out of high school, I went to work down the pitcher field. First, I worked as a timekeeper with the Ozark Engineering Company and did a little steel rigging on the side. Well, in fact, I got into the steel rigging crew by accident and stayed for a while. And also got down in the ground a couple or three times. Any way to make a living, any way to work. Well, time went on here in Joplin. And 1928 passed, 1929. I had a pretty good job in 1930 and 31. I was working for the gas company. No, that was 1929, when the crash came. 1930, I was broke and on my uppers. Well, I still had a little money in the bank, and I had a ragtop convertible, but I didn't have any real money and didn't have a job. So six of us decided we'd go into a gouge. Now, there's a difference between a gouge and a diggings. A diggings is a big deal, like the pitcher mines. A gouge is when you take a pick and a shovel and go out hunting lead and zinc, figuring on your being rich. Well, we went up, six of us went into a gouge up by Four Corners.
Where's Four Corners?
Hmm?
Where's Four Corners?
Four Corners is about 6 miles northwest of Joplin, up close to Center Creek. And the old timers had told us time and again that there was a big batch of lead down there and a big batch of zinc, and that all we had to do was pump that ground out and we were in the chips. Well, we believed that because we wanted to believe it. So there were six of us. There was Hoagie Carpenter and Bill Trussell and John Hawkins, Walt Mosier, his brother-in-law, and I've forgotten his name, and myself. So we went out on the lease and we looked down there, and there was an 8-foot shaft. You could have dropped an elephant in it, and it was plumb full of water. And by the way, I'm back in my hillbilly racing because I'm using my hillbilly vocabulary. Anyway, it's what I'm used to. Anyhow, we went down to Boyer Machine and we rented this 7-inch walking beam pump. And if you've seen these pictures in not newsreels, in the on television, where it shows the oil fields, you see those nodders down there going up and down pumping oil. Well, a 7-inch walking beam works exactly like a nodder. Only it doesn't have a cable going down through the middle. It has an 1 1/8 steel wood rod attached to a working barrel and a piston down there. It looks just like a automobile piston. Two grooves and three lands, and the grooves are filled with 5/8, 7/8 hard rock or hard rubber packing. And you've got a tailpipe. It doesn't take very much at a time out, but it makes a lot of takes, and it keeps working all hours of the day and night. So we got the lot of the pump lower down the shaft, and we'd hustle this Ford motor to drive the hoister, and we had a drum for a hoister. We had a hoister drum. And we had a one long hit and miss Fairbanks Morse engine. And the doghouse, it was big enough to hold dynamite and caps and picks and shovels. And a little grub on the side in case we had needed to eat. And my job for the first month was to pump out the ground, sit there and feed pump gasoline into that hit and miss Fairbanks Morse and put water in the water jacket. And sit out under the stars or in the doghouse when it was cold and lay out there and watch the stars walk by. And listen to that pump going oompah, oompah, oompah all night long. And if you've ever been lonesome, that's lonesome. You watch the big bear climb over the world and you look up there and everything looks down as pitiless and cold. And you get the blues on your back. But the day came and we got the water out. So two of us went down into the mine. Hoggy was a hoisterman. Bill Trussell and I went down in the can. And by the way, if you've never been in a can and dropped, the minute the hoisterman cuts you loose, you're in free fall. And that is quite an experience. You, your toenails come down to play with your tonsils. But we got down in the ground, and there was a room about the size of, probably a fairly good-sized house, maybe 20, 30 feet high. 20, 30 feet wide, and went back into the hill about, I'd say 100 feet. And that was the main drift. Now, in the mines, it isn't a tunnel, it's a drift. And coming off of the drift were here and there other little drifts about the size for a man to walk back into where they had gone looking for the ore, probably out to drill holes that had been drilled out there when they were exploring it for Jack. Well, Bill and I went back there. There at the heading, and you've got three things. You've got the ground or the level, floor level. That's where you do your shoveling. You've got a stope, which is an incline that runs up to the heading, is where the mining is actually done, is the heading, which is a place, in this case, was about 20 feet wide, maybe 10, 15 feet high. And there it was. So we took our picks, we gouged around, and all of a sudden we found it. There it was, laying in there, running side to side, horizontally across the drift. About, I would say, 18 inches of rosin jack. Now there's jack, rosin jack, and black jack. Rosin jack's the best kind. It's the highest grade of zinc sulfate. And right underneath the rosin jack, like under a blanket, is about 1.5 inches of dice lead, which is what we were looking for in the first place. And we sat down and spent $1 million on the rocks, figuring we'd hit it, and hit it good. Anyway, next morning, we took our junk, lay there and bleed. We took our junk, went down into the ground, and drove around a hole, around a drill holes. You put drill holes in a head and in a pattern like 5 on the dice. 4 in the corners, 1 in each corner, and 1 in the middle. You shoot the middle one first by about 2 seconds, and then shoot the others towards it so the ground will break in towards the middle. And then from then on, it's just a dirty, stinking job. You stand there in the cold and the wet. You're slinging a 9-pound sledge, whipping that steel into the wall. when you get in there about, I'd say, we ran our steel, wasn't too long. We had two kinds of steel. We had a chisel bit that we started them with, and we had a four-way bit that finished out going into the wall. And one man swung the sledge, the other man turned the drill, and we changed off, and the other one swung the sledge, and the first man swung the drill. And we got back in about 4 to 5 feet. And then we took our dynamite. We had three kinds of dynamite. There's 20%, which is less powerful but doesn't have the sharp impact that the other has. 40%, and then 60%, and we were using 60% nitroglycerin, which, by the way, is touchy. And using fuliminated mercury caps and foot a minute fuse. Every minute it burned a foot. That's right. Anyhow, we loaded them up, and you don't just cut short a fuse when you're mining that way. You estimate very carefully how much fuse you can spare because you're broke, and how safe it can be to get out of the mine before the thing goes off. So you cut them, and then if you want 5 minutes on the first fuse, you cut it 5 feet. If you want 6 minutes on the second, you cut it 6 feet. Then you figure on your lighting time because you've got carbide lamps, and then you go back from the end of it, and you make a diagonal cut and break the fuse so the powder will be right there. You don't want to have it sputter or go out on you because you got trouble. So then you get ready and stack your tools around the corner so they won't get buried, and get your carbide lights, and you see that you've got a good juicy fat flame, and then you light the fuses and get the hell out of there. And you go down and you call for the can, Hoggy lowered it, and you got out. And you listen, and you listen till you hear five reports, because if you only get four, you're in trouble. So, lo and behold, you get your five reports, and you go on. And the next day, you go down in that mine, and you got a little push buggy, and you got a can on it. I had a friend named Ernie Kreider, and when they introduced one of the cans that they put down in the field after they'd used 1620s for years, they put a bigger one down there and tempted the miners with a little more money coming in. And they brought this new can in, and it was bigger, and they said, the ground boss said, it holds a ton, and Ernie sniffed and said, hell yeah, it's a ton of post-toasties, and we walked off the job. Anyway, that was the size of the can. When you got in the can, you hung one leg out. In case the can swung, you wouldn't get run into the cribbing, because you were taken out real fast. That Ford motor ran good, and Hoggy didn't have much time, so he pulled you out quick. Anyway, you went up there, and you got five reports, and the next day you went back down into the ground. And shoveled it out. You had a little narrow gauge track railroad with a little buggy on it. So you shoveled it and took it out to Hoggy, and he drug it up to the top and run it through the screen that we'd built, and he did all the screen aping himself. A screen ape was the man who beat the rocks through the screen in order to make them smaller. And you also hand-picked a lot of the ore in order to get the best ore out. You didn't have to jig it. Jigging was I don't know, I can explain it, but it'd take too long to explain these things. All right. Fine. Anyway, you got that out, and then after you got that out, you took a rest and drank a little coffee and went back in and started whipping that shiny spot on that steel, and you got another round of shot. And it was dirty, and it was mucky, and it was cold. And once in a while, and I won't bring this in, because if you ever meet a 7-inch walking beam pump coming down the road, you'll know how to pack it. We had a 7-inch walking beam pump. It's a 7-inch tube going down into the ground. Well, this was 150 feet long. There was a 10-inch tailpipe, and it came off that 10-inch tailpipe to about a 6-foot working barrel. In this working barrel was this piston. Well, the hoisterman had the lower cable, and you fastened on the tailpipe, took the bolts out of the flanges, and let the tailpipe down. Then he unhooked the rod and dropped the rod down to the bottom, Then you took the old packing out and put in new packing. Then you guided that back up in there. Then you refastened the tailpipe. But the trouble was you were working in the sump and the pump wasn't pumping and the water was running in and you were up to your waist and finally up to your chest in ice cold water, and there was a fine rain coming down from above, so it wasn't exactly too pleasant. But it would never get too much, because if you got up so far, it'd run back into the shaft. But after you got it done, Hoggy got it hooked up and got it started again, it started pumping, and you went back and put on some dry clothes and went out. So if you ever meet a 7-inch walking beam, you want to know how to pack it, that's how you do it. A little fun there. Okay. Anyway, we did all right. We, Bill and I, managed to get go along. We had some turn-ins. We made a little money, got okra, peas, and corn on the table for a little while. And went along, I guess, for maybe 3-4 months. Then one day, Bill was away, I think. I went down in there by myself. Yeah. I went down in there by myself. I put in a round of shots. And the next morning, I went down and I shot her blind. There wasn't one smidgen of jack or lead or anything else inside. So, since I'm an incurable optimist, I figured, well, I'll come back. I'll just go hunting it. So, for 6 months, I hunted by myself for that ore, and I never did find it. I drove about 100 feet back into the hill and made a tunnel about the size of a big door. I did my own timbering too, by the way. When you timber, we weren't in hard rock ground. Hard rock is not like mud and pocket. Hard rock is solid and will keep its way. Mud and pocket will cave on you. I had to put up A-frames. We cut them from the timber around the mine. And then Hoggy would send me bound brush and poles and whatever he had, and I'd put the A-frame up in front where I was going to drill, and then I'd drive the poles overhead and stuff the leaves and stuff in there so the ground wouldn't start. As long as the ground didn't start, you were all right. If it started, you could get buried. That was the difference between keep holding it in place. And it was muddy and wet, so it could start easy. So you had to watch that. If you were walking in a big mine and all of a sudden you heard a splat and there was a rock beside your head at your feet that hadn't been there a while ago, you got out of there and you got out of there quick. And a lot of good men got killed in the mines. Anyway, I spent the time looking for it, and it wasn't there. So the day came when it still wasn't there, and Hoggy and I decided we'd get out, and I don't know, there are blues and blues, but that was blue. That was mood indigo. And so we cleared out. But that wasn't near as bad as the hard rock mines. The hard rock, there wasn't anything for miners. It was just a dirty, filthy job. The mine operators were the only people I know of that invented throwaway people, because a miner had no protection, he had no OSHA, he had no fringe benefits, he had nothing. If he got buried under a slab, that was his hard luck. Most of them, or a lot of them, didn't. They got silicosis, and silicosis is not tuberculosis. Silicosis is when the fine flint that they were mining from and shot and made into dust went into the miners' lungs, and they didn't have masks, and it cut their lungs up. So they finished out their lives sitting on their front porch coughing their lives away, and that was a miner. He never had anything. A lot of them had dirt floors, 4 or 5 children, no money, and died slow.
Where'd you get the money to start your mine if everybody was broke?
Well, I didn't say I was broke.
Oh, I thought you were.
No. For me, it was broke. I had about, I don't know. For that day, it was pretty good. I'd been making up as much as $700 a month, selling washing machines for the gas company. And But it all went away. They called me in and said, no, soap, it's gone. Well, give me your choice. You can stay and Bill Edmonds can go, and Bill's got two kids. What do you want to do? And I said, I'll go. But I had money in the bank, a couple of $1,000, and I had a car. And when I walked out of there, I didn't have either one of them.
Out of the mine, when you left
out of the mine.
Did the other fellas bring money with them too, or did they borrow?
Well, three of them were paying. They was three of them working, and they would pay in money for. Oh, they were broke. Bill was broke. Trussell was broke. Hoggy was broke. But the others had been working on a job on jobs, and they paid in a couple of dollars a week or so for powder and expense like that. But and we took in a little money. We had had several turn-ins, and. Part of it we had to, well, that was a funny thing. You leased the ground, and the man who made the money was the guy that leased you the ground. And the ore buyer, I always thought, fudged a little bit on the weights. I'm not too sure about that, but I'm a naturally suspicious man anyway.
Do you remember who you leased from?
I wouldn't bet on this. But I thought we leased from George Moore, who bought the ore from us.
He was also the ore buyer.
Yeah.
He was a private, or did he work for a company?
Well, he was private. They would go out, and he had little spots of land that he'd accumulated, and he'd lease it to gougers. The kind of a mine we were in was a gouge, not a mine. We were not hard rockers, because it wasn't hard ground. We scrounged. We scrounged everything we could, and sometimes the scrounging was bad.
Did you take your stuff to Moore, or did he bring his operation to you?
We had a mule in a way. They belonged to Hoggy.
Basic.
Yeah, basic. It was worse than basic. It was something else. But like we had, like Bus Brown and Ernie Kreider and I were in a dry bone diggings. Dry bone is lead carbonate. Looks just like what it's called, dry bone. And we had a mule wagon. But that's all we had up at Four Corners. And we carried it in and carried the check out.
Where did Moore have his office? Or where did he do the weighing?
Now, I would have to say, doggone it, as near as I have forgotten, Bob, but in my mind it seems like it was down around on Wall Street about between 10th and 12th. Now, I could be wrong on that. I was very much wrong, because that's been 50-some years ago, and my mind is slipping. I mean, you know.
Right.
Slipping the cog in the brain. But it was no experience. Some of those, if you really want to find out, go over to the Mineral Museum, and there's a prototype of the woodchuck over there. And I think that hole in the ground, the woodchuck, you could probably put the Frisco building in. It's an enormous thing. And pitcher's floating on water. If that water's all drained away, that pitcher's going to cave in. That's right.
The chopper.
Well, you got it here. It's a desolation. They left a moonscape from Dunawag, which was sheet ground, all the way through Joplin, Carterville, Webb City, Galena. Is a desolation down at Pitcher Tree, Carden, all of those places. They're nothing. Nothing but chat piles. And every one of those chat piles come out one shovel full of time and some miner's back.
Did you mine before 1930?
Well,
had you ever been in the ground before?
Mining, well, I was too young. We went into a lead gouge out by where the bank is on East 7th Street. I can go down there and find it today, find a little hole in the ground that three of us went. And that wasn't mining, really. We had a windlass.
And what year was that?
Yeah, it was just nothing.
Now, what year did you try that? Remember?
Well, now, wait a minute. I was just out of high school. That would be 1921. 22.
Okay, what'd you do then?
You mean from high school?
Well, that east. Tell me about that. That place that's past St. Louis, isn't it? Or is that around St. Louis?
Well,
St. Louis, is that?
Well, Patterson, Brownell, isn't that out somewhere along in there?
Yeah.
Well, you know where the bank is on East 7th. Come over the hill, and there is the bank, and this was about southeast of the bank, about around 8th Street, not quite on 8th, there wasn't an 8th Street there, I'm sure, not quite on 8th, just southeast of the bank, about a block, there's a little hole down there that we dug.
Okay, that was just a ground level digging. Now who worked that?
William Brown, Bus Brown, Ernie Kreider, and myself. And actually, we just went out there hunting something to do and maybe a few dollars to get. It wasn't a mine, it was just little old three kids going out on a gouge. And we had a little fun, and we made a little, well, we got one turn in or two. Dry bone's not as good as the other for money. It doesn't bring the money, or didn't at that time. Well, you can call it it was an experience, all right. You learn.
Okay. Did you have any experience with unions while you were growing up?
Well, I was in school, and in the summers, I was serving my apprenticeship with my father in the sheet metal world. We were working for the Joplin Hardware Company, sheet metal trade. And
Where was the office for that?
Well, the tin shop was on Joplin Street, about six twenty-one or so along in there. The Joplin Hardware was across the alley on between 6th and 7th on Joplin. And I went into the tin shop then with Dad to serve my apprenticeship out. And they were organized, and Dad was a shop steward. And about that time, the Joplin, well, I guess Chamber of Commerce and the rest of the people, merchants and all around here, organized a open shop. And they decided that unions were a very bad influence and that they would open shop the town. So they did. And so we, my father and I, and Shoop and Bill Simmons, went out on strike. And they broke us. And Shoop and Bill went back to work, and Dad and I were too stubborn, and we didn't overwork. We went up to the Vino Hardware, and Dad made an arrangement with Joe Vino to open a little tin shop in the back, and there we scratched out a little bit of a living. That was about the time when I got tired of that and went out and started doing a little mining and all. But when Coolidge, before that, no, about that time, Coolidge went in, and they had a strike in the West Virginia Hills. The coal miners had one. And Coolidge broke it with the Army. I think if you look back, you'll find that's right. He sent in the troops. They didn't fire a shot, but they scared them all. And long about that time, about the time of the open shop movement, why, the United Mine, and this is how I remember it. I could be wrong on the date. The United Mine Workers sent organizers into the mine fields down here to organize the pitcher miners. And they didn't get to base one because the operators broke them. And at one time, and I don't know the exact date, Violet remembered it, we had the Beltline, the Southwest Missouri Railroad, ran trolley cars to Pitcher, and the Pitcher miners came up on a show of force. They wanted to parade down Main Street, and the electric line road ran at 20th and Maiden Lane, and that bunch of miners were met by people with pick handles and shovels, and they broke out a war right there at 20th and Maiden Lane.
That would be while Coolidge was president in the 20s?
Well, it was long in the 20s. It could have been, although, let's see, Harding went in 20, and he didn't last too long. It was probably while Coolidge was in, because it was, or Hoover, it was one of the two. And they had a war went on right out there on the corner of 20th and Maiden Lane. But Pitcher Miners had nothing. They had a song. You can erase this if you want, but the Miners' Life at the end, and they had a song in black humor. Three American Sumpties, Hawk Hawk Spit. We cannot even eat or drink. All we can do is sit. Just three American Sumpties, Hawk Hawk Spit. And that's how you ended. And I cleaned that up a little bit. But it was miserable. It's no wonder they got drunk on Saturday night. Not at all. That's all they had. And say they left a desolation. They ruined the environment. They can't. There's no way they can clean that water up. Not a way in the world. I up in our little mine up there. We had a little trickle of water that ran down from the head and through along the floor. And it was about the width of your hand extended and about maybe a couple, 3 inches. And it was just as clear, as crystal clear and pure. And you know what it was? It was a weak solution of sulfuric acid. You couldn't drink it. I could wash my mouth out when I got thirsty, which I did, but I couldn't, bitter as gall. In fact, down on the corner, where was that Diggins? That Diggins was down by the viaduct that comes off Stone's Corner and goes west. That's the road to Four Corners, if I haven't forgotten. And there was a mine up there. Was it Tecumseh? I don't remember. But there was a place where when you put a pump in the ground, didn't last 6 months. The water ate it up. I'm not kidding. That's right. And that was brass pumps. And that's what they've got down Pitcher, because that water is still picking up ore and redepositing it, if I got it right, and I think I have. But Pitcher, tar paper shacks, broken down miners. There was a dice game going over the department store there. Pat Wright had that. That's all they knew, drink and gamble. The only time I ever saw miners on their knees, and somebody will holler about this, is when they were on their knees in the dice game at noon. It's a God's fact. Lee Phileas, there was Eastern money in there. Anna Beaver number 2 was owned by the Jacob Astor estate. Lee Phileas was the agent for another agent who was the agent for the Jacob Astor people. So the money was going back east, that money. And then the big mines were the Rialto, the lawyers, the Anna Beaver, the Eagle Pitcher. Eagle Pitcher just practically, that was the Bandoleros. Eagle Pitcher just about sacked up that part of that corner down there. Hmm. And they made lead paint. And now they're scraping lead paint off the walls because it's killing us. Something else. There it is, Bob. Okay.
That's good.
Was it all?